My name is Santa Claus. I'm hundreds of years old, and my favorite film is Die Hard. Ho, ho, ho. Welcome to the Christmas edition of Podyssey. Cue the music and a happy Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Hello and welcome to the December, the Christmas edition of the Podyssey. Those years go round quick. I'm here with Sam, Roberto, Nick. Hello, fellows.
Hello.
Hey, guy.
Hello.
Thank you very much to our listener for that intro. His name, I think it's a German name, Santa Claus, his name was. And he said that December is a very busy year for him, and listening to back episodes of the Podyssey is getting him through a very busy period at work. So thank you so much for sending in your intro. Right, chaps, let's have a quick look back at November before we get into all things Christmas. What have we been enjoying in the past month at the Odyssey?
Sure. Well, I recently saw Small Things Like These at the Odyssey. It's the new Cillian Murphy film based on a novel by Claire Keegan. It's a pretty miserable film. I'll start off with that.
So, Cillian Murphy does like those.
Yeah, he does love those. And this is, no exception to that. I think it's probably my favourite Cillian Murphy performance, for sure, that I've ever seen. He is pretty remarkable in the film. It's kind of set in the 80s in Ireland against the backdrop of the Mitre Than Laundries.
So it's really bleak stuff.
Very,
important
very bleak
stuff, but bleak stuff.
Yeah, so it's a tough watch, but really terrific film. I really enjoyed that. Also, not a DLC, but just wanted to give a shout out to this documentary I watched on BBC iPlayer called Made in England, The Films of Paul and Pressburger. It's presented by Martin Scorsese.
Oh, wow.
Who was a huge fan of Paul and Pressburger and all of their films when he was growing up. I think he actually married Michael Powell. His wife, Thelma Shoemaker, is the editor of all of Martin Scorsese's films.
Oh, wow. So there's a kind of a link in there.
And it's just kind of him talking through each of their films and what they mean to him and the legacy of cinema as a whole. Yes, really terrific film.
Nice. People can catch it on the iPlayer.
Yeah, you can catch it on iPlayer, and there's lots of great films that those guys made as well on there as well at the moment. So there's The Red Shoes, I think, is on there, and plenty of others.
People to do at home in the winter months.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they've got really good Christmas energy, those films. They're not explicitly about Christmas, but they have that kind of feel of kind of family and friendship and coming together. If you don't want something explicitly Christmassy to watch, then any of those, I think, is a good recommendation.
Oh, awesome.
Sure. Nice.
Very nice.
I need to watch some
Very
more
nice.
I've only seen The Red Shoes, but yeah, I've got to get on that.
Roberto, enjoyed anything over the past month or so?
Yeah, remember last episode, Nick and Sam were talking about Anora being their favourite film. Yes. Yeah, I did manage to catch that, and I was thoroughly entertained by it, particularly when it became much more of a comedy than I imagined it was going to be. I was pleasantly surprised by that.
So remind us what this one is.
So it's about a girl called Anora who works at a kind of an exotic club.
It goes out with a Russian guy.
And it's funny because when you mentioned like the Russian oligarchs, I was like, oh, it's going to be quite a serious thing. Like it's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of like stress and they're going to be after this couple. Mm-hmm. But like because of the kind of the way the characters are portrayed, it does just end up becoming this like almost this, I saw someone refer to it as Looney Tunes. It's not that far, but there is just a part where a guy's running and he like slips like legs up in the air. Yeah. And I was like, I did not
Home Alone vibes.
There's just this whole scene where in another film it would have been like really tense music, like it's really, really crazy. But then in this film, it's just these three guys going like, what do we do? What do I actually do right
it
now?
It really turns into like a Norman Wisdom, Laurel and Hardy, like shenanigans for an hour. And it's hilarious. Pretty unexpected as well.
Yeah, so I did very much enjoy that. So I recommend catching that if you can find it anywhere. Still playing.
Nice.
And I think you mentioned a film, Chris, that I don't want to... Nick.
Chris.
Sorry. mentioned a film, Nick, that I also watched, but I'll let you... animated
that
film.
Would be Jorah 2? Is that a run?
No, I was thinking more child-friendly.
Well, child-friendly. Okay, yes. Well, there is one, yeah. We showed last weekend, I believe, called The Wild Robot. Great DreamWorks animated movie. You know, probably in the realm of Pixar, like if you love your Pixars, or if you're just any sort of like adult who loves animation, or you know, mainly it's for children and stuff, but it's just like heart-wrenching. Like, it follows this robot that's stranded on an island, and they want to get back to their home, but then they start to like see the animals around the island they're on, and sort of learn about life, and he like learning looking after this little mongoose, is it?
Or it was a gosling.
That was it. Looking after the little, like the ugly gosling, like the separated one, and it's just really touching, and really like nice performances in there. The animation's great. It has this sort of like, almost like a look of like sometimes there is like a painting vibe to it. Like definitely, there's 3D animation, but there's definitely like 2D shadowing and things like that going on with it. Which just like makes it look like stunning. It's one of the probably best animated movies of the year, I'd say.
I'd love to see it. A friend of mine took his daughter to see it and said he was in absolute bits by the end of it.
Exactly, yeah. No, I wouldn't blame him. And then also we did have the 10th birthday surprise film.
You're speaking to a VIP guest, of course.
We had a chat on that night. Yeah, which was Gladiator 2.
Incredible.
Which I think is not out now in the Odyssey until December, but yeah, that was our surprise because it came out the day before general release. And you were very excited to watch it.
I was. Can I just tell people at home listening, like, it was a real, it was a genuine moment of excitement. So you guys do your anniversary celebrations. This was a special one because it's 10th year.
Yeah.
And every year it's a kind of secret film. So you go along, it's lovely, you get some drinks, you meet the team, it's really nice. And nobody knows what the film's going to be. And there's some nice speeches about the Odyssey, and everyone's shown a bit about how the cinema was brought back to life, and that bit was great. And then the premiere, the royal premiere of Gladiator 2 had been the night before, so it was on all the news that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Bethany stood at the front, she was like, and now, you know, without further ado kind of thing, tonight's film is Gladiator 2. There was an audible gasp around the place. People were genuinely excited. And I thought it was amazing, by the way.
It is a great sequel, to be fair.
Really,
I think the performances are amazing. Denzel Washington's really good.
He
is amazing anyway, but he just brings different sides to the character you don't even see happening. I really didn't see happening like towards the end, but Paul Mescal's also great in it, and they bring back a character as well, I believe, from the first film.
They do.
To link it up. And
it's kind of quite cleverly done. It's weird because I remember the first film and I absolutely loved it as well. I would say anyone listening, if you enjoyed the first one, you would just definitely enjoy this one. It's kind of, it's more the same, which sounds damning, but it isn't. It's like, it's a mix between a sequel to the first one, which is kind of what it officially is, and sort of a redo of the first one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but I thought it was great. I absolutely loved it.
Mum and Dad loved it. They were sat upstairs with me. They really enjoyed it. I wouldn't think they would because of the, you know, just the sort of violence aspect. But no. Thoroughly enjoyed myself, Mum and Dad, and yourself.
But yeah, really enjoyed it, and very nice occasion as well. And well done to everyone for putting it on. And good to see so many kind of local people there. And amazing to see that bit at the start where they kind of, they showed the Odyssey where, you know, leaking pipes.
Yeah.
People having to kind of kick doors down to get in there, and how they kind of brought it back to life. It was really amazing, that bit.
It's always quite funny when you're sitting, when you're in the cinema as that video's playing, and just kind of like looking around like,
what?
This is a product. This.
And the policy got a mention in the speeches, which I was very delighted about.
Did you get to meet James Hanaway at all?
I didn't. No, I didn't. They kept me away from anyone who was too important. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Good.
So, yeah, well done, everybody. Really enjoyed that. Definitely, if you're listening, go and see Gladiator 2 when it's out in December. And we'll take a quick break. And then we'll come back. And because it's December, we'll get into the best Christmas films. Welcome back to part two of the Podyssey, where we are obviously about to discuss Christmas films, the best Christmas films, what makes a good Christmas film. The mind boggles what these three film intellectuals are going to chuck at us for this, but let's have a listen. So I tell you what, without further ado, Nick, let's go to you first. Talk to me about your favourite Christmas films.
I will. Okay, so I'll just start from number five. So we are sort of doing this in ascending order. So Batman, if Batman Returns, is the fifth one. But we're not saying that it's like any less or better of quality. It's really just the way I see it.
That's fine.
Yeah, Batman Returns, starring Michael Keaton as Batman, Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman, and Danny DeVito as the Penguin.
Great film.
Set at Christmas time. Even though I've looked up the release dates for all of these movies, and this one was July 10th in the UK.
Really? What's it?
Yeah, so it's a summer hit, and but it's set in Christmas time, and very much like the best Christmas you could ever have, really. Like, you know, you've got Penguin, who's like this sewer dwelling like gangster, and you've got Bruce Wayne, aka Batman, at the highest high in like Wayne Tower and whatever. And it's just it plays with the Christmas motif a lot as well. Like all of the sort of baddies are like frozen villains.
That's
as well.
Right. And
like
the Penguin that. Army has kind Penguin of like Army. Coloured lights on the hats when they're
exactly.
wearing the little missiles.
Exactly. And he's actually got penguins looking after him from the zoo, the Gotham Zoo, right, like in the sewer. And it was also just like the way it is, like the styling of it. Like, obviously, it's directed by Tim Burton, who did Batman in 89 as well. And this one was in 1992. The styling of it, like, they really make the Penguin look like a. Like a penguin figure.
They do.
Like,
it's Danny DeVito, isn't it?
Yeah, he's Danny DeVito. He's got fins for hands as well. Like, and he eats fish raw because it's brought to him in the office
and
when he's trying to campaign.
There's a scene where he bites someone's nose who annoys him.
Oh, yeah.
And his nose himself is like beakish and stuff like that. I was doing a bit of reading up. I just wanted to, like, this trivia that apparently Danny DeVito, he stayed in character between takes.
Really?
Like, he was completely method with it. And then also, I just want to mention Michelle Pfeiffer. She's like one of the most iconic villains of all time, as Catwoman. Really,
she's great in that.
Selina Kyle, you know, she's got amazing scenes where she like rips up her apartment at that first bit when, because of her like origin, and then she finds like she's playing the voicemail and she's like graffitiing her wall.
That's
and
right.
She puts a live bird in her mouth as well,
and she sews the outfit all together.
And then there's that one scene where she's in the shopping department. Store and she whips everyone's mannequins' heads off, and she did that in one take.
Wow,
apparently. So she's like an incredible actress, incredible performances all around. Danny DeVito, Michelle Pfeiffer, and the Christmas setting, making it the fifth Christmas film of my list.
Very good.
Number four, we have Gremlins.
Yeah, oh, great film.
From 1984, which was released in December 7th. So Christmas film altogether. Of course, the main character Billy is gifted a gizmo as a pet, and then he has to follow these three rules. Alas, he cannot follow them because he's a little teenage boy. directed by Joe Dante and written by Chris Columbus, who we both may or all may know. Joe Dante directed also Small Soldiers and Inner Space. Inner Space is a great movie. If
that's where
that.
He gets injected in.
He gets injected in like an alien experiment. And then Chris Columbus, he wrote the script, but then he went on to direct. Obviously, he directed one of my other favourite movies in here. But then he directed also like Harry Potter and wrote a lot of these like screenplays. He's pretty much like a protege of Steven Spielberg as well. Like he produced Gremlins. And I actually read up also that the set for the town in Gremlins was the same set used for Back to the Future.
Okay.
So the same Back to the Future town that you see is... literally the same one you see in Gremlins. Great movie. It's got like monster effects that I love as well, like the puppets and like a Jim Henson-esque vibe going on.
And again, it's got that Christmas thing where it's not the warm, cuddly Christmas, but like they're always swinging about on Christmas lights.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And they're all just like presents and stuff.
Exactly, and they're all like cackling at each other, and it's like sort of warm in that regard. But it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, obviously do watch it. Number three, we have Miracle on 34th Street,
which I
was thinking back when I said, we should mention that. But yeah, I've got it on my list. In the 1994 version, though, I've not seen the original black and white version, which I don't think I need to be honest, because this one I feel like does it all for me.
Yeah,
Richard Attenborough playing Kris Kringle, and you have got Mara Wilson, who's obviously like famous for Matilda, and I think she's only famous for three films, which was Matilda, Mrs. Doubtfire, and then this one.
Good three.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Elizabeth Perkins plays her mother. You've got Dylan McDermott, who also plays the lawyer, trying to prove that Kris Kringle is in fact the real Santa Claus. And it's just really heartwarming. There's a touching moment in it where when he's in the department store as the Santa, he talks to a deaf girl. He signs Jingle Bells.
Oh,
with her.
Yeah.
And that's a really, really sweet moment. And also just like the fun they have with when they eventually get to the court case, they put like kids on the stand and it's like, who's the real Santa Claus? Like, that guy.
Yeah.
It's just really campy and it's really cheesy. And I think that's where I really enjoy it.
I really love the bit in that film where the kind of the court case gets like publicised, mm-hmm. and then everyone starts holding We Believe signs. There's exactly, all the big yeah. Coke adverts saying Coke believes and the Yankees believe and all this thing. I really like that.
There's also quite a big part of like the Macy's Day Parade. So Thanksgiving was yesterday at the time of recording in America, and they have the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and that's a big part of the original movie that I read as well. They actually name Macy's as like the department store that Kris Kringle was part of. So I think that's why they might have added that Thanksgiving Day Parade in the beginning of the show, because then they go, well, I think it's like Gilson's or whatever, the department store.
Yeah, that's right.
They go on to. But no, great movie. Number two, Home Alone.
Oh, what a film.
1990.
Yes, please.
In December as well. A Miracle on 34th Street came out in December. But yeah, directed by Chris Columbus, who I mentioned, of course, who wrote Gremlins. I think this was in 1990, but Gremlins was 84, so obviously a few years after that fact. Directed by Chris Columbus and written by John Hughes. John Hughes is one of my favourite like filmmakers also. Like, he directed a lot of coming-of-age movies like 16 Candles and Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Breakfast Club. Breakfast Club, like, one of my all-time favourites.
Yeah,
Macaulay Culkin and his brother also, Kieran Culkin, who played his cousin Fuller in the movie.
Who's now in Succession, of course.
He's now in Succession, and I watched a film, A Real Pain, which he was really great in as well. Overall, like, a children's dream. I don't know. Like, you sort of don't want to be left alone, but if you were left alone, that is the sort of what you want to happen, right? You foil the criminal plot. And Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern playing Harry and Marv, the Wet Bandits, are just like, you wouldn't... Joe Pesci, like, playing already like gangsters through, so like Goodfellas and Casino and things like that, and then he comes into this children's film and just acts like a complete boss. Like, you can't fault him, really.
I watched it last Christmas, of course, and what I found is an interesting thing about just getting older and stuff. I've started to wince a bit at the bit where the two burglars are getting paint in the face. Do you know what I mean? It looks so painful for them, for they're getting burned and down.
It really is. It's damning painful. Like, the one that gets me is, so when they're going up the stairs, the paint cans, like, falling down, that's, like, it's hefty. And then also, I don't know why, but it really makes me cringe, and it's also, like, painful is when Marv
steps on a bauble.
Steps on the Christmas lights, and it goes, it's that one shot as well where it's, like, close up in the feet. And then he's like, and it's like,
you
like,
really feel that.
Yeah, you feel it. Same one with when, is it the same film where he gets the nail in the foot?
Yes.
And that is just like, it's torture for them. But it's a great movie. I've got the soundtrack on vinyl because I really love the soundtrack.
Like, soundtrack's really the choral, festive. Yeah, exactly.
It's completely festive. Yeah. I mean, you have to watch it. And then lastly, The Muppets Christmas Carol. Number one Xmas movie. That came out in 1992.
Superb.
And it's obviously based on the Charles Dickens tale. Sir Michael Caine pulls through with like an almost like award winning portrayal.
He does the best thing possible. He just acts it like he's not with the Muppets.
Yeah.
He basically just goes for it as Scrooge.
Yeah, that's apparently good. So I was doing some research, and that's, so Brian Henson is the director for this, and I don't know the relation to Jim, but he obviously is related to Jim Henson. And he wanted to pursue the role of Scrooge because he'd heard from his mates like John Cleese and Peter Sellers and Sir Roger Moore that they had so much fun on The Muppet Show that he should really implore to actually seek out a role. So Michael Caine. So Michael Caine seeked out this role of Scrooge, and as he talked to the director, he said, "I'm acting like I'm going to be acting with actors from the Royal Shakespeare Company. Like, I am no way going to be acting as if Muppets are around me. I'm going to take completely straight." So yeah, it's just amazing. It's got like lovely songs in it, and I like the tale. I like reading the book of Christmas Carol anyway, but it's just brought to life like full.
It's brilliant.
Brilliant life, crafty life through like the puppets. And
sort of interestingly, in kind of highbrow, you know, reviews of the most, not true to life because it's fiction, but you know, like the best reproductions of Charles Dickens' original works, like that was always in there, along with like Royal Shakespeare Company versions from like 1974 and stuff. That's always in there as like, are really true to the kind of story.
And I think
he's
given, so Michael Caine just gave himself extra kudos to like all audiences, like generally, by, you know, being that he sort of plays a, he plays a charming role, because, you know, obviously Scrooge sort of eventually learns to love.
And
it's just really sweet. And there was a bit of controversy actually. So last year was the, two years ago was the 30th anniversary of the film, and they brought back a deleted scene, which was a cut song when they had it theatrically released. They brought it back.
I've seen the version of that, and it blew my mind because it's such a familiar film that I was like, "What is this new song?"
Disney Disney cut it before theatrical release because they thought the song was too sad, which it is. Like it's very sad, but it completely, you know, then molds the fact that Scrooge becomes like a better man, or becomes a better man after that. So yeah, that is my top
five. Christmas movies. Very quick. Bit of trivia about Muppets Christmas Carol. At the end, Scrooge is kind of dancing and singing when he's reformed man in front of a massive shop called Micklethwaite's, and that is Michael Caine's real name. He's Maurice Micklethwaite. So, a little nod there.
Can I quickly give significant mentions? So, three movies. One, first one is Klaus on Netflix. It's a great movie, great animated movie. It's like sort of like an origin story of Santa Claus, just really good. Jingle All the Way, 1996, from Arnold Schwarzenegger trying his utmost to get a toy Turbo Man for his little boy, and it just all goes wrong. I think the comedian in it as well,
Tim Allen, is that
he's an American, I've forgotten anyway, but it's a great movie, go check that out. It's better than Die Hard. And The Night Before, 2015, it's completely like off the cuff comedy. It stars Seth Rogen, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Anthony Mackie, and they're just sort of like three guys who have always been mates during school, and then they get older, and one of them is starting to like lose touch a bit, and they're like, no, we've got to go to this party together. It's a very like adult Christmas comedy. It's got Michael Shannon in it as well. He plays Jesus. It's,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's great.
Nice.
Good stuff. Good solid list. Roberto, what you got for us?
I was thinking of putting Klaus as well. I put it on my own honorable mentions because I've been meaning to rewatch it for ages. I've only seen it once. But hold me accountable because this year I'm going to rewatch that, definitely. okay, so I'm going to start off. First, this might be a hot take. I've got Home Alone 2 on my
list.
Because I was also going to say that as well.
So for me, Home Alone 2. I know Home Alone 1 is probably technically the better film because Home Alone 2 is kind of a rehash in a few ways. But you were talking about the brutality of that first film earlier. Home Alone 2, I'm pretty sure like one of the first things, well, not the one of the first things, but like before the big kind of slapstick sequence, Kevin is throwing bricks off the roofs at Marvin.
That's right.
Joe Pesci's character. And it's just, maybe it says something about me. I just love the whole, all of the slapstick in that film is just perfect.
That's like a great film. A lot of sliding around on ice.
Yeah. It's got the scene where he like gets electrocuted and it like turns into a real skeleton.
So great.
More films should kind of take elements from cartoons like that and kind of recreate.
Yeah, they almost
live action.
Get confident because the first one, the villains are really cartoony and they kind of do that thing of like, dabba, dabba, dabba.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second one, they've just fully gone for it. And like,
yeah,
it
yeah.
Also features the current leader of the free world, Donald Trump, in a cameo.
It does.
They might have cut that scene out though, because I remember them. When I'm pretty sure, maybe on like streaming services they've cut it out, but I'm pretty sure when I them rewatched it like a couple of years back, they'd cut that.
Maybe,
Sinister. If you're listening,
sure,
CIA,
he might have reinstated it for his own self.
Yes, but and also another one, Tim Curry is in Home Alone 2, and he's great. He's excellent. He's so excellent, yeah. So that one as well, and kind of I'd say a lot of the stuff that's great about the first one is present in the second one as well. And it's got that song, Nobody Ought to Be Alone.
That's
that one,
right,
classic.
Yeah.
Okay, I do have, I've also got Batman Returns, actually. Yeah. And what I was, the only thing I'll add is that I think it works as a Christmas film because what's like the main thing about most Christmas films? Family, right? Mm-hmm. What are all of the three characters in Batman Returns lacking? Family.
Yeah,
so it's like the reverse.
Good point.
It's like the
yes.
It's like the negative.
Very much.
But you know, there's some. Well, actually, are there any? There's some nice stuff.
Yeah.
Batman and Catwoman are. Maybe.
Maybe.
I think that but ultimately that's why I like it. It's almost like not the anti, like because it's set at Christmas, but it is like. It's not particularly a Christmas story, which is fine though, like because not every single Christmas story has to be the same.
Yeah, yeah. It's true.
I thought about putting a horror film on my list, but I've only seen it the once. I'm going to like, it's got to be films you rewatch, you know, successively. So I'm not putting a Black Christmas on there because it's a bit too sad. But anyway, so Home Alone 2, Batman Returns. I feel like you've probably got this on your list as well, Sam. I've got I do have Die Hard.
I didn't put that on my list.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, in that case, I'm happy to talk about. Been meaning to rewatch it for ages, and actually managed to do it a couple years ago because I watched it when I was younger. I watched all the Die Hard films, but I was like, I need to rewatch this. Finally rewatched it a couple years ago, and yeah, it is a Christmas classic, undeniably.
It's Alan Rickman just acting
yes,
out of the box.
Yes, he's incredible in it. And
is he a baddie Russian or just Eastern European generally? Like,
I think it's Russian.
Yeah.
I think
he's a German, isn't he? He's a West German.
But he properly goes for it.
Yeah.
He does, yeah. All of the villains in that actually like have like some sort of character. I really like it when villains are kind of... like all the henchmen kind of have their own like antics about them, like that first guy is like this like really straight cut glasses like kind of prim and proper dude. They're all like characters in their own way, and then he's got a brother, so that plays into it.
Yeah,
but like the action still holds up because of how scrappy it is, because it's just he doesn't do much head-on confrontation. He's just like running and then maybe occasionally spraying some bullets. It feels desperate. And
he also, Bruce Willis has that thing that is impossible to explain why, but you know, like just real watchable charisma.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I don't know why some people have that, because obviously you're not in their presence, you're just watching them on the screen, but there's something about Bruce Willis just swaggering about that is really watchable.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, Yippee-ki-yay is obviously very iconic, but there's also that one scene where he's like calling someone at like some sort of control center and they're like, I need you to calm down. He's like, he says a line I can't say because it's got a lot of swearing in, but it's about ordering a pizza, and I remember just cackling at that when I rewatched it. And then the supporting cast as well. You've got the cop like on the ground. You've got Argyle. Is his name Argyle in the limo?
So.
He's got like a whole thing
yeah,
going
I love
on.
That guy. So good.
His wife is also like kind of helping out in the hostage situation. So it's just basically lots of great dynamics going on. Still really holds up and influenced a lot of modern blockbusters. Basically,
yeah. Super film.
Fantastic. Okay, I'm gonna talk about Nativity real quick. I just want to bring this up.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it.
Because Nativity, it's, you know, it's quite cheesy in a few ways. But I don't know why, and it's kind of like the Muppets Christmas Carol thing.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Freeman, it's like he's acting in a Ken Loach social realist drama.
Yeah.
It's like
it so
there's this scene where these two kids are having like a argument, and the way Martin Freeman like goes from angry that the argument's happening to like understanding of like, okay, maybe I was being a bit too much there.
Yeah.
You can see it all happening behind his face. Mm. It's bizarre.
It's a bit like the Muppets Christmas Carol thing. One properly serious actor taking it really seriously at the centre really kind of elevates these things a little bit.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. And then, you know, Mr. Poppy's just doing his own thing.
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Yeah,
Nativity.
Is it one of my favourites? I don't know, but I've watched it a few times
very
and
watchable.
I just can't get over Martin Freeman.
I just had put off watching it almost forever because I'd sort of seen that it existed and thought there's absolutely no way I'd do that. And then just one Sunday afternoon, like let's say December the 14th or whatever it was on, and me and Jen sat and watched it. And I was very pleasantly surprised. I did enjoy
it. Give Nativity a go if you haven't.
I've only seen it once. I have been wanting to rewatch it, but... I was the same as you, Neil. I'm a bit sceptical on it, like, because it's like a modern-ish movie, or like Christmas movie. But no, completely works. Yeah, yeah, I get you there.
There's
you
a balmy second or third one.
I was like just going to say.
David Tennant, yeah. And they kind of have a go at the Christmas story, but like the really deep aspects.
They do.
Of
yeah,
the birth
well, the first
of
thing
Christ
that happens in the sequel is like a donkey giving birth and David Tennant taking a group of children to come and watch this happen.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's the maddest thing.
Yeah, the second one is. Balmy.
They're all balmy. There's, I think, four of them now.
Wow.
And they get progressively more.
Yeah, I imagine four is a tough watch. I don't know. Yeah, maybe
so
I'm fair.
I've heard.
Yeah.
But I think the second one is watchable, but still pretty mad.
Absolutely balmy. Yeah.
The third one's called Dude, Where's My Donkey, which
it
I think
is,
is
a I mean,
great
of course.
Subtitle.
Of course it is. Dude, okay, Nativity. It's in. It's in.
Okay, I've got one more, and again, bingo. I've brought up an anime film. Nice. But, Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, you've seen a film called Paprika.
Yes.
So it's by the same director as that, and it's called Tokyo Godfathers. And basically, I don't even really need to sell this because it's one of those films where the log line just tells you immediately what you're getting in for. So it takes place in Tokyo, obviously, run up to Christmas, and three homeless people find an abandoned baby and decide to go find its real parents. Along the way, becoming very attached to the baby and each other, and also you find out various like things about their lives before the film happened. Genuinely, like if you watch it, you'll even though it's got like kind of that kind of detail of particularly like homeless living in Japan and like kind of the camps they've set up and stuff, really sweet. So it's this perfect mixture of kind of grounded reality, but also it brings in the Christmas joy
really
well.
I love that. I think we've probably brought people a brand new Christmas film.
It's it was on Netflix a couple of years ago, but I don't know if it might return. Maybe,
and it's called
who knows? Tokyo Godfathers.
Tokyo Godfathers. Okay.
I don't know what the English dub is like. That's the only thing. So if you don't watch subtitle films, I don't know what the English voice acting is going to sound like. But I personally recommend it with the Japanese language English subtitles. Yeah, just really, really emotional, really sweet, and also got like it's got this nice aspect where the homeless one of the characters, Hannah, is like, we aren't action heroes, we can't do this, but the film is kind of almost paced like a action adventure film, so it's actually like, oh, they are. So yeah, those are my
great
five,
list, and I love the sound of that Tokyo Godfather. I was going to seek that out. That's great. Okay, Sam.
All right. I've got a top three and one honourable mention. I'll start with Home Alone 2. I also think, I mean, I love both Home Alone films, but I tend to find the second one the more enjoyable of the two, just because, as you were saying, Roberto, it just ups the ante.
It's bigger and better. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the New York setting of it is really special as well, and they just make it feel so magical. I know you're in New York recently, Nick. When I went when I was like 12, it was, even though it was in like, you know, Easter sort of time, we were just walking around and we were like, oh my god, this is the bit from Home Alone 2.
Oh,
this
yeah,
is like
nice.
The bridge
yeah,
in the park
yeah.
from Home Alone
'cause it really
2
shows like there, you know some yeah. places where like god that's that overused phrase like the city is one of the stars of it, but in Home Alone 2 it really is.
It really is.
New York is like the main actor.
It's in the title.
Yeah.
Lost in New York
yes,
City.
It is, of course
exactly.
it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, yeah, just on that basis alone, I think it's one of the best cinematic representations of New York. And, yeah, you always just get a very cosy kind
nice.
Of feeling when you watch it.
Yeah.
On the same sort of tone, I suppose, Elf as well.
Oh, Elf.
Big
one, for sure. Also set in New York.
Will Ferrell, fantastic.
Yeah, just
James Caan.
Yeah, James Caan as well. James Caan is great in that film.
Another example, James Caan
plays straight man.
Like he's in a mafia film.
Taking
like
it very seriously.
Yeah.
And just like, what is up with this man who thinks he's an elf?
Yeah, his acting makes that film, because he reacts exactly how a normal, slightly bastardish person would react to Will Ferrell turning up.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's a really great kind of fish out of water scenario.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, just all of it is brilliant. There's some really good practical effects in there, especially at the start. They did all these kind of forced perspective sort of techniques to make Will Ferrell look massive, because he's already a pretty tall guy, but they made him look huge compared to all of the
elves.
In the same scenes. It's just really, really lovely film, really heartwarming. Got a really good, very catchy score as well. I just can hear the notes of that all the time. I can hear it right now.
I remember we were on the down bar last year, and as the film was starting, and you were like singing along to the theme tune. I was like, okay, nice.
He knows it. Yeah.
I know it too well.
Jon Favreau, I know I was watching this thing on Netflix about the making of the movie, and he really seeked out the style of like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the stop motion animation for that beginning set in the North Pole.
Yeah.
And he's very much influenced by that, the sort of like those stop motion like animated movies, so like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which and like more like American TV specials, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's got that feel at the beginning, which I really like as well. And you know, like that sort of like when you look at Christmas Mail, and it's got that red and white trim on it.
Yeah.
So it's very like it's very traditional. It's really
got
enjoyable.
All the kind of tropes in there.
Yeah.
There's also a really clever bit in that film where you just get a real shorthand for what Buddy the Elf is like, where there's a kind of cafe in sort of downtown New York, and outside it says something like "World's Best Cup of Coffee."
Yeah.
And he goes in, and there's a kind of really bored cafe owner, and he's like, "You did it! You made the world's best cup of coffee."
That's really so great. I quote that like all the time.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, Elf, very good choice. Very good choice.
Yeah, it's a good choice.
I will also go with the Polar Express, the Rob Zemeckis film.
My son's favourite.
Nice. Yes, and we're showing that, brief shout out, on Saturday the 21st at 10:30. It's a pyjama party, so...
Oh, I'm there. Come and wear your pyjamas. I'm sticking this in my phone.
It's also 20 years this year it came out.
Yes.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, incredible.
Which is great.
Yeah, I think it's just a remarkable film. I think some people have issues with the animation, especially now, since, you know, some people claim it kind of veers into Uncanny Valley territory. Mm. I've never really found that, maybe because I watched it since I was quite young, and I've just watched it every year since.
So that's funny you say that about watching it when you were young. So I think with Christmas films, a lot of your love for them, it goes beyond whether they're objectively good or bad. It's how they come into your world.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'd never seen the Polar Express. I'd kind of read the odd slightly sneery animations look creepy type things about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then for whatever reason, my son Freddie, who's five, like maybe last year, he loves trains. We saw it was on. We're like, okay, let's give it a go. And he absolutely loved it. So now the Polar Express is a real kind of backdrop to our little family. Oh. And we listen to the music when it gets to December. Yeah. And like, yeah, so I've got so much love for the Polar Express, but I genuinely can't objectively say, is this even any good anymore? Because I just love it being part of our fabric sort of thing.
I genuinely think it's a truly great film. I think the music in particular makes the film.
The music is amazing, yeah.
So one of the best soundtracks of all time, in my opinion. It's really captures the magic of Christmas and the magic of believing in Santa Claus and just, yeah, the notion of family and coming together. And all
there's something mad happens at Christmas time where there's a Josh Grogan song, you know, about believing in magic and stuff. I would say any other time of year, that is a straight switch off. That is the worst thing I've ever heard. If you catch me at the wrong time, I'm going to tear up at that song.
Yeah,
great film. Yeah, I really like that.
About the animation, yes. Now, of course, you look at it and it's like, wow, it's aged, because it's like, it's not early CG, but like it's still like within its changing roots.
Yeah, it's like early motion capture.
And that's the thing. Like back then, that was sort of revolutionary, I suppose, for film.
First fully motion capture film.
And then I think he directed Beowulf after like that, and then they had the Christmas Carol, Jim Carrey, which was all completely fully CG and also directed by Rob Zemeckis.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think you just have to think of it like as a sort of classic now. Like,
I agree.
Well, it's of the time.
It's
Tom
also
Hanks
got
doing
that
all the motion capture.
Oh yeah, Tom Hanks as well.
Yeah, in like five different roles.
Yeah.
It's also got that thing that I think all truly great. So you obviously got the comedy Christmas films. The truly great Christmas films, they're not afraid to be a little bit weird.
Yeah.
So you know, so Polar Express has definitely got elements of that weirdness. Like there's the guy on the roof.
Yeah.
You don't really quite, he's never really explained.
The puppet
like,
train.
Yeah.
The train with just all the puppets hanging.
Yeah. But there's, don't you find Christmas films always have a bit of that in them. Sort of slight odd quirkiness. Great choice. Yeah, love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, I was reading.
Go on, Sam.
I just read this thing recently about, it was written by the screenwriter of this new Netflix film called Hot Frosty, which is about a snowman coming to life as a very attractive man. But this guy, he was talking about how Christmas films have a particular level of sincerity that people are more willing to buy into than any other kind of film. And that's why they're kind of special, because in, like, you know, most blockbusters that come out nowadays, there's always an element of kind of meta poking fun at itself, or not being willing to take itself fully seriously at any given time.
Yeah.
But a Christmas film, like The Polar Express, for example, is completely sincere the whole time. It has a certain gravitas about it, and you know, it's not like it's a serious film or anything. It's very fun and silly and weird, as you were saying, but still it has that level of, like, you know, no, this is some serious stuff, and we can take this seriously and still have a really nice time with it. I think that's why Christmas films are kind of great.
Yeah, and also now very big business. I was reading a thing at the weekend about how Hallmark, basically the Hallmark Channel in America, churns out
hundreds of them,
and they cost about £1 million each. They're spending big on them, but then they make so much money because, for a lot of people, the Hallmark Channel with these films on just becomes the backdrop to their December, so they just absolutely sit through all of them. Yeah, crazy. So yeah, thank you very much. That's good selections there. I would say
most of them are going to be at the Odyssey in December as well. Obviously, since we are the Podyssey, we have to. Home Alone, Muppets Christmas Carol, Elf, Polar Express. Everything.
New listings out soon.
The programme is out already. I mean, if you want to go and see this movie or any of these movies, definitely grab a ticket as soon as you can, because December's a busy time.
Yeah, good selections. I would say, before we go to the next part, I would say honourable mentions to Scrooged with Bill Murray.
Think about that one.
The Holiday, which is a bit of a staple in our house.
Yes,
possibly a bit of a mixed bag.
Never seen it.
Have you never seen it?
No. I've also never seen The Holiday.
Really?
That's a good one.
I recommend it? I think I recommend it. Yeah,
I think
it's good.
So.
I like Kate Winslet.
And also, Billy Bob Thornton's Bad Santa. Bit of an antidote to the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I really, really enjoy that film. If you want to see a Santa, like, staggering around bars, misbehaving, that's a good one for you.
Nice.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back just for the last section of the policy. And welcome back to part three of the Christmas episode of the Podyssey. I really don't know where that year's gone. Incredibly, December, there's lots of good stuff coming up at the Odyssey. Of course, there is loads of the Christmas films that just got mentioned we'll be showing. So, chaps, before we go, what have we got coming up this month?
So, in the middle of the month, we've got plenty of showings of Conclave, the new Ralph Fiennes film, directed by Edward Berger, who made All Quiet on the Western Front.
I'm really keen to see this. This is about the election of the new Pope. Right?
Yes, and all scandal behind the scenes and, kind of espionage happening.
Right.
Yeah.
It does look interesting.
Yeah, it looks really, really good.
I read the book, and it's a real proper thriller. It's like twisty, turny. It's not... It's kind of more interesting than it might sound from that description.
It's about like Da Vinci Code-esque.
And like there's kind of different cliques trying to do different things. And it's all kind of whispering in corners, a bit like Wolf Hall or something. Everyone's whispering in corners and plotting against each other. It's very good.
I like those.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Conclave coming up. What else have we got?
I'm going to mention a film I've seen, actually, and we're playing Wednesday the 11th at 7:30. It's called Heretic.
Hugh Grant as a baddie.
Yeah. Feels strange talking about a horror film for December, but, you know, alternative viewing. Starring Hugh Grant. And the interesting thing about the film is, like, from what I think will become apparent when you start watching, it's quite a lot of dialogue, more than you'd expect for a horror film. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed it. I didn't really know what to expect, but I enjoyed it way more than I thought it was going to. Mainly because, one, the acting, not just from Hugh Grant, but also from the two girls that he is embroiling into this situation. Sophie Thatcher's the actress who plays one of them. I can't remember the other one's name, which is really bad. But all three of them are really good and play off each other really well. But of course, Hugh Grant is at the centre and doing his villainous thing very well.
Sort of out of nowhere, he's becoming one of our great, great actors.
He's really leaning into like kind of more character acting, I suppose you'd call it. Yeah, definitely, like really, and kind of he kind of utilizes his charm against you in this film. Yeah. It is really interesting. I thought it really worked. I think some of the reviews are like, oh, it's a lot of like him talking to these people and telling them deep things. I was like, that kind of works.
That's kind of the point. Works.
Yeah. Kind of adds to the whole situation. I haven't watched a horror film in a while where I've been like, what is going to happen next? Because I genuinely cannot tell. But in this film, I could not tell you while I was watching it what was going to happen.
Excellent.
Cautious recommend for me because I think it is a bit different from the usual horror film, but I personally really enjoyed it.
We've also got a few like big hits coming to December in the Odyssey. So Paddington in Peru, that starts on I think it's Saturday the 14th on the matinee at 1 p.m. It's just a really, you know, the conclusion to the cutest bear of all time in London. he's with the Brown still, but this time he has to go on an adventure to Peru to find his Aunt Lucy. I think we did have the double bill, which you were a member of that time. You should have seen number two. You got to see three then. You know, got to finish it off in the Odyssey. it's just as cool. It's just as charming. And, you really got to give a shout out to Ben Whishaw, who voices Paddington, because it's now really, like, he's just made it that extra level of, like, recognisability now and like, stature in, like, British culture almost. And
well, he met the Queen, of course, Paddington.
Exactly. So we've got a load of those in December. We'll probably have a lot more in January, too. I want to give a quick shout out to Wicked for the musical theatre people. Very much looking forward to that. I've not seen it yet. We do have it in December, and that's going to be an epic, really. I've heard many good things about it. That'll be showing the first time after Boxing Day, so on the 27th of December.
That's nice. Christmas out of the way, then something to do.
Exactly, yeah. We might fit, hopefully it'll be of the ilk of the, not essentially a Christmas musical, but it's always a nice time to watch musicals and things like that around Christmas as well.
I agree.
Just a quick one as well, since we did mention it a minute ago, Red One. We do have that on. I think the first showing of that is the Wednesday the 18th at 7:30. We've got it one more time on Saturday night as well. 21st.
And this is the one where kind of The Rock is a sort of slightly futuristic.
Yeah, so J.K. Simmons plays Santa.
Yeah.
And then he goes missing and The Rock plays his like number one elf.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about this in future episodes because it's not very festive to do now. I am quietly thinking about starting a very slow one-man backlash against The Rock. I'm getting a little bit bored of his
I'm happy
stick,
to join that, to be honest
with you. Well, but that's for a different episode.
We'll have Moana 2 in January.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We'll enforce it more, though.
But then, ironically, that will win me right back round.
Yeah, I'm on board for that. Definitely on board
for that. Right, chaps, fantastic. And thank you for all of your input over the year. The end of a year of... the policy. Incredible. No, I think starting in March.
Okay.
But yeah, unbelievably. So,
crazy.
I guess all that's left is to wish everybody a very, very happy Christmas. And thanks for listening. And chaps, do you want to wish people happy Christmas in the style of whichever festive Christmas film you choose?
Okay, I'll go first. I'm gonna rehash my Arnie impression. This is Arnie from Jingle All the Way. Okay. Ho, 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 everybody. Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, someone's been working on it. Really very bad. Good. Yeah. Very, very good.
You've inspired me now. I was going to... I said off the air I'd do Santa. But maybe... Do you know what? I'll also bring back... I'll do Michael Caine, but as Scrooge from... I'll do Happy Scrooge from...
Oh, specific. All right,
So this is same at the end of the film, I guess. Merry Christmas to everyone. That's not Michael Caine.
That's just a man saying Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to everyone watching the Podyssey. Enjoy.
Yeah, we got there in here. Good stuff.
Needed a camera for that one.
Yeah. You missed some good actions at home there.
I'll try and do my best Santa impression, classic Santa.
ho, 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 Merry Christmas.
Very, very good. And that is a perfect note to end on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a lovely Christmas. Be lovely to each other, and we'll be back in the new year. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at the Podyssey, you can email me at neil.rodger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at the Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.